This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, November 30th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. In the aftermath of a hurricane or a tornado, insurance companies pay out claims to the people and businesses that have been affected. Well, it's the same in the event of a cyber attack, which can cost a company millions. And just like insurance firms model what the impact of storms could be to determine the fallout and costs, they're working to build better models on the impacts of cyber strikes, particularly attacks on big companies that could cause catastrophic damage to the economy. On today's show, our cybersecurity reporter James Rundle joins us to explain how the cyber insurance industry is doing that and the time pressure they're under to get it right. That's after these headlines. Starting with the protests in China, where security services are harnessing the country's pervasive surveillance system to hunt down people who've participated in demonstrations. The protests calling for an end to China's strict zero-COVID policy first appeared over the weekend in several big cities, including Beijing and Shanghai. Authorities appear to be preventing fresh demonstrations from taking place by deploying police to gathering sites and using messaging apps, social media, and cell phone data to track down organizers and participants. Under President Xi Jinping, China has expanded its ability to track citizens using technology. The country has hundreds of millions of cameras, some equipped with facial recognition software. The police can also access detailed mobile phone and social media data, including location information. During the pandemic, the government enhanced those capabilities as part of its contact tracing efforts. Twitter has stopped enforcing its COVID-19 misinformation policy. It's the company's latest move to loosen moderation guidelines on the platform under new owner Elon Musk. The change, announced through a notice on the platform last week, makes Twitter an outlier among major social media companies, which generally take steps to curb COVID misinformation. Twitter didn't respond to a request for comment. Google and iHeartMedia have agreed to pay $9.4 million to settle allegations they used deceptive practices to promote Google's Pixel 4 phones in radio ads. The Federal Trade Commission and seven states' attorneys general claim in 2019 Google hired iHeartMedia and several other radio networks to have on-air personalities read endorsements of the Pixel 4. The scripts included lines like, "It's my favorite phone camera," and "It's also great at helping me get stuff done." But the FTC says the hosts typically didn't own or regularly use the phones. A Google spokesman said the company takes, quote, compliance with advertising laws seriously. iHeartMedia, the nation's largest radio station owner, declined to comment. And shouldn't we have self-driving cars all over the place by now? Well, investors seem to be asking themselves just that. After years of bold promises from driverless car startups, investors who threw piles of cash at the industry are growing impatient with the pace of development, and they're starting to pull back on those dollars. Our reporter Tim Higgins says that could leave only a few big players in the field.
There could be huge potential, huge upside for those who have the money and the patience to go the distance. Perhaps the likes of Waymo, Google's parent Alphabet self-driving company. GM has invested big in a company called Cruise. For smaller companies, it's a tougher road. There are still investors looking for the next thing, and that's kind of what Silicon Valley is known for, these ups and downs. So right now, we're kind of in a classic period of a winter on this technology, and we've seen in the past that these kinds of cold periods create a shakeup. There are winners and losers, and if this technology is real, then we could potentially see some winners come out of it.
You can hear more from Tim on this morning's episode of our sister podcast, What's News? All right, coming up, insurance companies are working out ways to prepare for a potential catastrophic hack. Who are their efforts going to protect? We'll discuss. That's after the break.
If you can plan barbecues and weddings, you can plan to protect yourself from a natural disaster. Sign up for local alerts, prepare an emergency kit, and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Oh. Over the last couple of years, insurance firms have slowly been gathering a clearer picture of what cyber attacks cost their clients. A few major incidents, like the NotPetya virus that invaded corporate software in 2017, or the attack on the Colonial Pipeline last year, have shown just how big the fallout from cyber attacks can be. But there still hasn't been a truly catastrophic cyber attack. So how is the cyber insurance industry preparing for one? Joining us to discuss that is WSJ Pro cybersecurity reporter James Rundle. Hi, James. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Zoe. Thanks for having me.
So, James, since 2020, we've seen this big pickup in the number of claims for cyber attacks. How have insurance companies been adjusting their policies to deal with this?
Yeah, particularly from 2020, there was a huge uptick in claims, basically from cyber attacks of all stripes, whether that's ransomware or other forms. And it really knocked the insurance industry back a little bit, I think. A lot of insurers got into cyber thinking it was a really lucrative source of revenue. But then as the claims started to pile up, they started to look at it and realize that actually we're not being as disciplined with our underwriting as maybe we should be. So in reaction to that, premiums went up across the board by a significant amount. And insurers really started asking more of the people who wanted to be policyholders. They wanted to know exactly what kind of cyber defenses they had in place and what level of protections they were putting to secure their systems in. And they were refusing cover for people who didn't have it.
Okay, so higher standards for the people who are purchasing these cyber insurance policies. But how do insurers determine, you know, what the payout should be when there is a cyber attack?
Well, it depends on the level of coverage you buy. I mean, cyber insurance generally covers a number of areas. So you'll have your initial incident response where you might have to hire a cybersecurity company to come in and find out what happened. You have the legal counsel you need to retain in order to meet any regulatory obligations. You have communications for crisis scenarios and everything else. So there is a whole battery of costs that were involved in that. Depending on the size of the organization, of course, those costs will increase or decrease accordingly.
So even with the growing number of policies out there and with the growing number of payouts that insurers have had to make, there's still this concern that they're not prepared for a catastrophic cyber attack. Can you, I guess, start by sort of telling us what a catastrophic cyber attack would actually mean? How does that compare to other cyber attacks? Because I'm sure some companies would feel it's pretty catastrophic when they've been hit.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to stress that we don't actually know because we haven't had one yet. When we talk about catastrophic hacks, we're not talking about a single company being taken down or a cyber attack that causes, you know, several million dollars in damage, which is, you know, pretty catastrophic for those involved. But what we're talking about here is something that really affects the economy or affects the stability of society. So we're the collapse of the financial system, for instance, or exchanges being taken down, clearing houses, things that are vital to the running of the country that if they were to stop working, the country would effectively stop working as well, which is why it's one of those things that people hope doesn't happen, but they're worried will eventually.
I mean, can you give us an example of what one of those companies is? Because we have seen fallout from, you know, a cyber attack on one company affect other companies.
We have. One of the scenarios that the people I spoke to for my article are working on is what happens if one of the major cloud providers gets taken down. So you're talking like an Amazon here or a Google or a Microsoft or someone like that. Because these people don't just power one company in a specific industry where there would be some downstream effects. They power huge amounts of companies across huge numbers of critical infrastructure sectors, whether that's finance, retail, logistics, healthcare, that if they were to go down, it would have severe repercussions across a range of areas.
So given that we haven't had one of these catastrophic cyber attacks, how do insurers make models of what they might be dealing with in that scenario?
Well, that's the big question. It's what they're struggling with right now. The problem is cybersecurity as an area to insure is something called the contagion effect, which is what we've been alluding to, where the impact of an attack on one company can have far-reaching consequences among many, many others. And it takes an incredible degree of complex mathematics to be able to even attempt to model how that would happen. And the fact of the matter is you just don't know. You don't know how one company being taken down will affect another, which in turn will affect another, which in turn will affect another. It's extraordinarily difficult to try and figure out exactly what would happen if the Bank of England were to be taken down or the London Stock Exchange or the New York Stock Exchange simultaneously or something like that.
I mean, how much harder is that to model than, say, like a Category 5 hurricane, where you might have a lot of fallout and one thing could affect another, could take out homes and power grids? I mean, they do have some precedent, right?
Well, that's the thing. We have had Category 5 hurricanes before, and we've had natural disasters before on epic scales that we have the data where we can look at that and say, okay, well, historically, this is what happened. And we can use that to extrapolate what would happen now in our more connected society and everything else. The issue with cybersecurity is that we simply don't have that information. We only have relatively small scale events that we can use to guess what would happen on a larger scale. But the truth is, we just don't know.
And we were talking about this ripple effect where, you know, one company faces a cyber attack and it affects all these other downstream companies. But are insurers thinking about what the impact on them might be? I mean, how do they prepare for the potential risk to their business if this happens?
For sure. That's the big existential question, really, is if one of these were to happen, would it be so large as to actually take down the carriers themselves? Would they not be able to cover their obligations and the claims in this instance, or the reinsurers who insure the insurers, you know, what would they be on the hook for as well? And so we started to see some moves towards an element of risk management in this area. Lloyd's of London, which is not an insurer, but is a significant marketplace for insurers, recently directed its syndicates to adopt language that would exclude state-backed catastrophic attacks from their insurance policies. Because, as we said, the risk is so great, they simply don't know how the industry would cope. It would be a systemic event, not just for society, but for the insurance industry as well. We're also starting to see, I mean, from my reporting, people were telling me that some insurers are excluding specific cloud providers from their coverage, saying, you know, if something goes wrong, we'll only cover up to a certain amount of damages, or we will not cover if this happens. So they are starting to look at this and think, okay, well, we need to put some limits in place. We need to put some exclusions in place to make sure that we're protected as well and that we can provide the services that we're offering.
All right. That's our reporter, James Rundle. James, thanks so much for explaining this for us.
Thanks, sir.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, wsj.com. And if you're a fan of the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Free Expression, a new podcast from The Wall Street Journal with me, Jerry Baker, editor-at-large of The Wall Street Journal. It's a podcast in which we're going to be trying to do something a little different, dig a little deeper into the issues behind the headlines that are in the news all the time. So please join me for my new podcast, Free Expression, with Jerry Baker at The Wall Street Journal. We're very much looking forward to really having some fascinating conversations, and I very much hope you'll join us.